Well, here on around in the Petersburg vicinity this week, I think we've gotten well over 100 species. But in Southeast Oregon, over the last few years, I've gotten well over 500 species, and that's really just scratching the surface. There's many more.
Oh, okay. Anything unusual that you've come across here in this area?
Yeah, well, a number of things. I looked at a few things last night, a couple of things that have never been reported for Alaska, a couple of them, one of them that's never been reported for Western North America. Some of these are small and fairly obscure, so they may be more prevalent out there than we know, but very few people would be able to collect them. But here in Southeast Alaska, it's unbelievably diverse. I've found numerous species that are disjuncts. In other words, they don't occur in any other place for thousands of miles, you know, across. And some of these are boreal. The nearest sites are in Russia and Newfoundland for a number of these things.
So what are those? What species are those?
Oh, a couple of them are things that your muskeg here is especially rich with, really interesting. And a lot of them are, you know, worldwide rare species, actually. Things like something called Ascocarini turficola, which is only known from maybe 5 locations in the world. Another one, Gyroflexus brevibasidiata. It's another one, it's a small little mushroom, but it's pretty, very distinct. And so both of these are very distinct. And so they should jump out at people when they see them. So I think that they haven't been reported does lean towards that they probably are quite rare.
Okay.
And but there's a number. I have dozens and dozens of species that haven't been reported from Western, you know, this part of the world before. So a lot of it is because Alaska has been a little bit probably under-searched so far. And so for me, it's really exciting because, you know, every day I go out there and see things I've never seen before. And I'm pretty good at this, and things I don't know what they are when I first see them, then I have to take them home and work on them. So for me, that's quite exciting.
Pretty different climate and habitat from where you are, right?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, the tree is different. We have different tree species up here. We have Douglas fir is the dominant tree species as you get into the northwest and south, and which it falls out up here. And so a lot of these fungi have very specific partners, you know. So there's a lot of species that are specific to Douglas fir. There's species that are specific to Sitka spruce and hemlock and things. And so you have some of the Sitka spruce things, you have an incredible flora and a lot of the hemlock things, but some of the common, say, Douglas fir things in the Northwest are completely absent here. So it's very interesting because, you know, things you're used to seeing constantly are just absent here, but other things that you think of as being quite rare, some of them are pretty really common here, actually.
And most of the species you're talking about probably aren't the edible kind, which is probably
my interest is not so much in the edible things, although you have a number of good edible species here, and we've seen a number of them this week,
mm-hmm.
Including Boletus edulis and the yellow chanterelle, Cantharellus formosa, variety Roseocanus. There are a number of others, but for me, the diversity is really where my interest is at, and mycofloristics, looking at where things grow and what they grow with and where in the world they occur.
Okay. I was just out looking over the weekend in a few of my spots for hedgehogs and chanterelles and didn't find very many. What makes a good season? What makes a bad season? Is a rainy summer in Southeast a good or a bad thing for?
Well, that's one that's, you know, we don't truly know.
Okay.
There's a number of factors that seem to come into play. You need sufficient wetness. There's a number of studies and things that show that diversity and abundance, wetness is very good to us. But except my observation is that you can have conditions that are too wet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I think we're doing now. A lot of places I go, every step I take, I'm raising standing water. And at that point, a lot of the roots and things, they're getting under very low oxygen conditions. So the mycelium usually dies back a little bit and it has to wait to repopulate. So you won't get a lot of fruiting during those conditions, even though the fungi are still there. So it's a combination of and there are some species that like a bit of heat, you know, the chanterelles, some of the rushulas, some of the early seasoning, the boletes like a bit of a combination of wet and warm. Then you get some of the later season things that actually don't appear until it becomes a bit colder. So soil temperature plays a big role. And another thing that plays a big role is the fall die-off of all the small herbs and things. It raises the atmospheric CO2, which is a trigger for mushroom production. In some of the commercial production places, that's how they get them to fruit, is by raising CO2 in the room. So we know that is a factor.
Is there anything in particular you're hoping to find here in Southeast Alaska?
Well, for me, it's any time I find something I've never seen before, it's pretty exciting. And it happens every day pretty much here. It's really an amazing place for fungi. You have amazing diversity here. There's some groups of fungi that are not well represented in the West, like some of the insect parasites, for example, in the Cordyceps tasty, which everyone thinks is pretty exciting. They'll parasitize and grow right out of insects. And up here, it's quite diverse, and they're fairly abundant. And there's other parts of the world that happens, but in Western North America, this is the best spot there is.